Welcome to this special report. I'm Brendan Palou. On the line with me right now is BC Education Minister Rob Fleming. Rob, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Well, Rob, the school year begins this week for students and staff. With everything that is going on related to this pandemic, do you feel that everyone is ready to go for what is going to be considered a unique year?
I think thanks to the tremendous efforts of principals and vice principals and teachers and support staff in districts right across British Columbia to plan an orientation week that begins today with just staff in the buildings and welcoming kids back Thursday or Friday. They've done a tremendous job being ready to safely welcome kids back into the classroom. And these are uncertain, unprecedented times to be sure in British Columbia and around the world. But I think it's a testament to the innovation and creativity of districts who developed plans this summer, fine-tuned some of the things we did in June when we safely welcomed kids back to class and are ready to welcome back this week.
Now, last week, you provided an update in regards to the federal funding that will be allocated to each school district based on enrollment. What are you hearing most from school districts across the province on how they plan to utilize their chunk of the $242 million?
I think you're hearing some commonality in terms of big areas where they wish to make additional investments. Certainly to complement the BC COVID-specific funding, I think some districts will choose additional resources related to cleaning. There's a number of districts that are hiring significant human resource staff for custodial positions, rural districts in some cases hiring attendants to assist the bus driver to get kids safely to and from school and make sure they stay in their assigned seating with their learning groups and all the other public health protections related to that. And then again, a number of districts are all making investments in remote learning programs for those kids who come from an immunocompromised family or aren't ready to return to school to support additional teaching support and staff positions to make sure that every kid is supported in the learning program.
Now, we've seen cases of COVID-19 pop up at schools south of the border where they immediately shut down classes and move them to a virtual format for a short amount of time. Now, if there are cases at BC schools, what is the plan and how many cases need to be reported at a facility before an outbreak is declared?
Right, and this is where we're so blessed to have an incredibly skilled public health office in British Columbia that has managed outbreaks in workplaces and in community settings of all kinds and been able to stop those outbreaks, which is generally two or more cases, from being part of a chain of transmission further into the community. And that's exactly the type of response and skill and expertise they'll bring to the school system. Regional medical health officers are the liaison to the school system and are part of the occupational health and safety planning that has gone on in schools around BC. And I think that Dr. Henry will tell you that the most important thing is to isolate and do an investigation of any case that presents itself in a school. Do things like contact tracing and where required have people self-isolate if there is deemed to be an exposure risk. So look, with 1,600 schools in BC, it would be the best thing possible to not have a single case or a single outbreak. But we know from our friends in Denmark and in other countries that we liaise with, there you have to be prepared. And there will be some instances where you have to step in and make sure that all kids are safe. And if they have to self-isolate before they get a test that confirms they're either negative or positive, to keep them engaged in learning.
How big of an issue is maybe the topic of false positives right now? Because we're hearing a lot of that right now, not just necessarily in regular day-to-day people as well, but also in sports that either constitute either a bubble format or non-bubble format, where some of the results are either skewed or maybe a bit mixed.
I think one of the things that BC did right immediately in this pandemic was that they developed a strong and accurate testing regime. So the test procedures and the testing that is used in British Columbia is different than other jurisdictions where this false positive problem has been discussed in the media. I think for a deeper scientific explanation of that, you know, Dr. Henry, who has, and Dr. and Adrian Dix, who have scaled up British Columbia to have 80 testing sites around the province and are planning even more. The question about how we put in place the right science to have accurate and available testing in BC is a story we can be proud of as a province.
Now, if parents do send their kids back into classrooms, is there a timeline to pull them out if they choose to?
That will range on districts, and parents, if they haven't heard from their school, need to be in contact with their schools. But every school in BC today is working with their staff teams, having a COVID-19 orientation and planning to welcome kids back on Thursday and Friday of this week. And we know that parents, having been surveyed by each district, have made their intentions known, and undoubtedly a number of them will change their mind. They'll either elect to come back for in-class learning, or perhaps to make a decision that elects another alternative that a district has provided, a remote online program, for example. And each district will have periods of time that allow families to make that switch, but also to provide some stability that once that choice is made, they'll have to stick with that decision for a certain period of time and have another window of opportunity to make a different choice at a different time in the school year.
Now, if classrooms do have large amounts of students, how do the schools or respective districts plan on distancing them accordingly, especially in cases where space may be limited?
Yeah, and I think this is where districts and schools specifically have been doing a lot of work on how to use multi-purpose space, for example, or even outdoor space to have kids be able to spread around, and also how they might assign different divisions. If there is a smaller classroom and a bigger one, they may make a decision about which learning support staff support which kids. Those are flexible, but what I would say is the largest advantage going into this pandemic year is that BC has invested almost $500 million annually to reduce class sizes. So the average in British Columbia for kindergarten is 18 kids. The average for grades 1 to 3 is 20 children in the province. We have caps of 24 kids for middle learning years, and the average is well below that. Even for grades 8 to 12, the average is between 22 and 23 students per classroom. So that's very different than other provinces that have much larger class sizes than the province of British Columbia, and that's the result of having hired 4,500 additional teachers over the last few years in BC.
What is the province doing to provide additional mental health support for students during this time?
Yeah, a number of things. One, we have some provincial resources that include talk lines that kids can call that are experiencing stress and anxiety in their life and need to reach out to somebody. But I think the mental health piece here, the big advantage of having most kids return to school is that they will be around other caring adults that many haven't seen for 6 months in their lives, including school counselors, including teachers and support staff, who they can talk about issues that are affecting them in their lives, and also just more generally to have a preventative mental health approach that teaches kids how to be resilient and how to talk about their fears and anxieties, and also get them settled back into school, which is a place where they can engage in learning and reduce their feelings of isolation from being at home and not around their peers. I think that's the single biggest advantage of the return to school for many kids who have had who have reported that they have declining levels of mental health.
Now, Ontario's back to school plan has no mandatory COVID-19 testing for the 2 million or so students returning to class. What is the province's stance when it comes to student testing?
Well, I think the testing availability in British Columbia, as I mentioned, through 80 different sites is very well supported in communities around British Columbia. And we have almost instant test results, you know, really within 24 hours or better. So continuing to have a robust testing regime, and Minister Dix will announce further enhancements to it in the future, is something that's served us very well and will serve the school system as it returns to in-class instruction. Obviously, anytime there is an exposure event, whether it's at a community sports event or whether it's in a business or a residential care setting or a school, requires that the contact tracing details who may have been exposed for what period of time and takes all the precautions around self-isolating that are required to make sure that individuals are kept safe and tested if need be to confirm that that exposure did not put them at risk and that they can return to school or return to their place of work.
Couple more questions with you here, Minister Fleming. How will schools or the province be able to differentiate whether or not a student either has COVID-19 or the flu, since many of the symptoms are somewhat identical?
Yeah, I think the main thing is that nobody should be coming to school or who works at a school, a student, a staff member, a teacher, if they have any symptoms of cold, flu, or what may be commonly presenting symptoms of those two ailments that could also be COVID. And they need to monitor their symptoms. If they deteriorate, they need to take additional steps, using the 811 app and consulting with their public health officials. But that's a very strict, important protocol that keeps everybody safe, is that you don't go to work during this pandemic. You don't go to school during this pandemic if you're feeling unwell at all. And people need to monitor their symptoms on a daily basis and take action accordingly. So I think what turns out to maybe a case of the sniffles, you have to wait for those symptoms to absolutely clear and monitor your condition before you go back to school.
Last question I have for you. Now, the BC Ombudsperson issued a scathing report last month based on 18,000 incorrect test scores posted by the ministry. Where does the province stand on that issue, and will students be financially compensated?
So we looked at the Ombudsperson report, and we have already implemented or are in the process of implementing 4 of the 6 recommendations. We have asked for an extension to address a couple of additional ones, including the potential for a compensation scheme if anyone incurred costs on the basis of incorrect exam tabulations. But I have to say it has been over one year since that error was corrected. It was corrected within a matter of days. So ministry staff worked overnight through a long weekend to ensure that human error was detected and remedied. So we'll have to see, but we will be implementing all those recommendations. But as I've said, in the course of a year, we haven't had a single complaint about a student not getting their first choice university on the basis of an exam error that was rectified within 72 hours.
Are you able to provide a little bit more detail as to what those recommendations are?
Some of them were around timely communication, around administrative processes in the event that there is an error generated in a electronic tabulation system. There was some good advice there from the Ombudsperson about how to prevent that in the future. I should mention that BC no longer has an exam scoring system. The provincial exam system has been wound down, and what we have are literacy and numeracy assessments that are in place that are part of the graduation program now. So what we experienced in the summer of 2019 is something that I'm very confident our ministry will be able to avoid in the future. Some of that is thanks to the Ombudsperson's thorough report, and some of it is because of innovation and changes to the ministry's operation of the assessment system that we now have in place.
And lastly, what's your message to parents in regards to some of their stress or anxiety about whether or not they should or shouldn't send their kids back to school as the academic year kicks off for students by the end of the week?
Well, my advice to parents, and this is based on me being a parent as well, is it helps to talk to other parents to see what their considerations are. It helps to talk to the school system to see what kind of programs they're offering, what school will be like. I think we've been hearing from a number of principals and vice principals and teachers and superintendents that the more they communicate with parents, the more they understand the way schools are going to be different under the new normal, these pandemic conditions, the health and safety measures that have been thoughtfully laid out, keeping kids in a safe environment, which is the priority and how the plan is anchored in each and every school in the province. I think that all helps. And look, families have do have different circumstances. Some families have an underlying health condition that puts them at greater risk of COVID. They may need to talk to a doctor about that. Some have elderly grandparents who play an important caregiver role. They may need to talk to their school about those kinds of circumstances to see if they want to return to in-class school or be associated with a remote learning program that the district has developed.
All right, Rob, well, thank you once again for doing this and taking some time out of your busy schedule to speak with me, and I'm sure we'll do this again in the future.
You betcha. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you, Rob.